see. They never wanted me. The curse is laid upon my race. Useless serpents, they bring disgrace. A man without a face. Time they pass again. It's so hard to tell where and when. Yeah, just do the best you can. The flames will burn away the waste. All the lies that they told erased. A man without face. A man without a 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 face.
Welcome, dear ladies and gentlemen, to the Rabbit Hole Radio Show with your host, David James. Greetings to you. Very interesting, all that we're learning. Isn't it amazing? Who would have ever thought all these things that we've been learning? Who would have ever thought up such a thing? It's amazing. Today, I believe we're going to look into the two twins of the city of Rome, Romulus and Remus. Now, let me say before I talk about this, is that some people call these things myth, and some call it legend. This is how the city of Rome was created. So, take it as you will, but nevertheless, it is very interesting what is being said about this story. Wait till you get the specifics of it. So this is called Roma, the city of the twins and triplets. The two most important cities in the entire history of the world are Jerusalem and Rome. It says Roma. The saga of the city of Roma is even more astonishing than Jerusalem. Unfortunately, most people who call themselves Roman, quote-unquote Catholics, have no idea of the true history of that city. The Romans, who loved to write everything down, but the papal monarchy, beginning with Constantine, destroyed everything. The great historian Titus Livius Livy, quote-unquote, wrote a monumental history of Roma in 142 books. Can you imagine that? But only 35 of the books have survived. In other words, something's been hidden. Without a thorough knowledge of the Holy Bible and its author, it's impossible to understand what makes that city tick. By the way, I meant to wish you a Happy New Year. Yes, this is the true New Year. See, the new year doesn't start in the middle of the winter. Does that make any sense to you? I mean, you know, the new year starts when everything starts coming alive, like right now. It's been coming alive a little bit early this year. Sometimes it's late, sometimes it's early. Anyway, April 21st was the most important holiday in ancient Roma. It is the birthday of Romulus and Remus, and it also commemorates the founding of the city. Nowadays, it's very subdued, and no pontiff has marched in the parade since the time of the emperor Jesus Constantine. Yes, there was an emperor named Jesus Constantine. Natale di Roma was the first important day in ancient Roma. The marchers are dressed as Romans, but no real Roman would ever tolerate a king in Roma. Many of the participants are carrying SPQR signs, the iconic emblem of the Great Republic. Participants, so there's a few pictures here. It says, listen to this carefully, because this is very interesting. I mean, it really is. There was an Israelite diaspora and an Edomite diaspora around 700 BC. The 10 tribes were forcibly removed by the Assyrians and disappeared from history. Well, no, they didn't disappear. Two famous or infamous descendants of Esau are the twins Romulus and Remus. Esau or Edom means red, and that is the color that most distinguishes Roma. That is true. Romulus and Remus were thrown into the Tiber, but they were rescued by a she-wolf. Here is a quote from Thomas Babington Macaulay's Lays of Ancient Rome. Now slain is King Amulius of the great Silvian line, who reigned in Alba Longa on the throne of Aventine. Slain is the pontiff Camers, who spake the words of doom, the children of the Tiber, the mother to the womb. The Roman historian Livy said that the word lupa, she-wolf, was a slang word for a prostitute. The name of the she-wolf, quote-unquote, who nursed the twins was Acca Laurentia. Now, what's interesting is you've probably seen this in times past if you've, you know, looked through anything about Rome. There's a statue of Romulus and Remus being suckled by a she-wolf. The only problem is it's not a she-wolf. If you look at this, the fellow that talks about Swissy was mentioning this too. He said, clearly the wolf is a noble animal. So I agree, you know. This looks like a hyena. It doesn't have the ears of a wolf. It doesn't have the face of a wolf. It doesn't have the body of the wolf. It doesn't have a tail of the wolf. It looks like a hyena. And it is, it has, you know, teats where the two boys are under the creature and they are getting their suckling, their milk. So, it says, besides Cain and Abel, Isis and Osiris, and Jacob and Esau, the most famous twins in history are Romulus and Remus, the founders of the city of Roma. The epic Aeneid by Virgil, I don't know how you say that, it's A-E-N-E-I-D, by Virgil, perpetrated the myth that Roma was founded as a Greek colony. The Greek word for twins is Dioscuri, sons of Zeus, and the Latin word is Gemini. When the twins grew up, they decided to build a city on the banks of the river Tiber. As with all twins, they were bitter rivals. They both wanted to name the city after themselves. Romulus was probably the firstborn, but Remus was not about to yield pride of place to his twin. So it says Romulus wanted to name the new city after himself, but Remus had other ideas. Romulus decided to solve that problem by killing his own twin brother. The traditional date of the founding of Rome is April 21st, 753 BC. Let me get that straight so we don't confuse, right? The traditional date of the founding of Rome is April 21st, 753 BC. Amazingly, the temporal power of the papal monarchy began in 755 AD with the infamous airmail letter from St. Peter to King Pepin of the Franks, commanding him to save Rome from the Lombards. Yes, I don't know if you've ever heard of that. It's a very interesting thing. They forged a letter from St. Peter, who, of course, was not alive in 755 AD, on the earth, that is. And they tricked a king from the Franks of helping them save Rome from the Lombards. At Rome, listen to this, Jehovah was renamed Jove. Jupiter means Jove is supreme. The Roman Senate was based on the 70-man Jewish governing council of the Sanhedrin, or Sanhedrin, it says. Romulus inaugurated the first ecumenical movement to abduct the Sabine women. After murdering his brother, Romulus proclaimed himself king and sole ruler of the new city. The new city became a sanctuary for all the criminals, outlaws, and escaped slaves from surrounding districts. Now, remember, if this is an Edomite, wouldn't that fit in pretty well that criminals and outlaws and escaped slaves would be attracted to such a place? This is a new place, right? All the surrounding tribes feared and hated the followers of Romulus. Romulus knew that his city, his new city, would be stillborn if brigands did not have wives. But no respectable father would ever give his daughter in marriage to a Roman. Romulus decided to become friendly, quote-unquote, to all the local tribes and invited them to a religious festival in honor of Neptune Equester. To show the surrounding Italians that his men were religious, quote-unquote, and not vagabonds, Romulus invited them to a festival honoring a god called Neptune Equester. Neptune Equester was the patron of the sea and horses. The Italians were amazed at the changed attitude, quote-unquote, and newfound hospitality of the Romans. When the festival was underway and wine began to flow, Romulus gave the signal for the real show to begin. From a prominent place, he gave the signal for his men to abduct all the young women of marriageable age. So it says, here is the report of that event from the Roman historian Livy. Many houses offered hospitable entertainment to the visitors. They were invited to inspect the fortifications, layout, and numerous buildings of the town, and expressed their surprise at the rapidity of its growth. Then the great moment came, the show began, and nobody had eyes or thoughts for anything else. This was the Romans' opportunity. At a given signal, all the able-bodied men burst through the crowd and seized the young women. Most of the girls were the prize of whoever got hold of them first, but a few conspicuously handsome ones had been previously marked down for leading senators, and these were brought to their houses by special gangs. Livy, The Early History of Rome, page 41. Obviously, Romulus picked the prettiest maiden or maidens for himself. Twins and bigamy are always found together in Scripture. The wicked descendants of Cain were bigamists, and Esau married two wives, at least two wives. The abducted females were sobbing buckets of tears, but there was nothing they could do but accept their fate, because any male, when resisted, or she resisted, was instantly killed. That event is still remembered today by the custom of newlywed husbands carrying their brides over the threshold. The rape of the Sabines led to a bloody war between the Romans and the Sabines. But the Romans prevailed because Romulus was a very skilled military leader. The Horatii triplets versus the Curati triplets. That's C-U-R-A-T-I-I and H-O-R-A-T-I-I. Tullus Hostilus was the third kingdom of Roma, and he was the third king, excuse me, of Roma, and he was as imperialistic and aggressive as King Romulus. He was determined to expand to the south and annex the city to Alba Longa. Instead of a bloody war which would exhaust both sides, the king of Alba Longa suggested that the conflict be settled by single combat between triplets. During the reign of King Tullus Hostilus, Roma and Alba Longa had a set of triplets serving in their armies. The ruler of Alba Longa, King Metius Futetius, that's a tough one, suggested that the triplets fight together and the winning side would be the ruler of both cities. The deal was sealed and the triplets faced each other in mortal combat. Here is the report of that event from the Roman historian Livy. The six champions now made ready for battle as they stepped forward into the lists between the two armies. Their hearts were high, and ringing in their ears were the voices of friends, bidding them remember that their parents, their country, and their country's gods, their fellow soldiers, and all they loved at home would be watching their prowess, and all eyes were on their swords. Livy, The Early History of Rome, page 59. That was a David versus Goliath combat, but two sets of triplets fought to the death. Only one triplet survived, the Roman Publius Horatius. After the battle, his sister saw him with the blood-stained cloak of one of the Curati triplets. She began to weep and wail because that was the man she was about to marry, so Horatius killed her too. A lot of mercy there, hmm? There is a hall in Rome named after the triplets. At one end is a big statue of Pope Urban VIII with the letters SPQR on the base. Urban was Pope during the bloody 30 Years' War and also during the Galileo rotating Earth myth. Urban also issued the bulls of canonization for Ignatius Loyola and Francis Xavier. Very interesting. You know, let me point this out. When I look at Roman statues, many of these statues have men with very curly hair. You've seen statues with hooked noses in Rome, too. And if it's true that it's an Edomite-based country, I will also tell you this, that if there's time, there might not be time now for me to read it to you, but I've mentioned to you that if you look at Rome year by year, there was never any peace in Rome. Every year, some kind of war or some poisonings or whatever. I mean, it was just complete, you know, when I look at the kings, let's just put it this way. When I look at the kings in Anglo-Saxondom, there might have been some things that went on that weren't nice and this and that, but nothing like Rome. And I said to myself, geez, this is kind of strange that, you know, these people are so hungry for power. They're all pagans. And they were all, you know, which you know, Edomites would be pagans for sure. And they're all, by the way, that 30-year war, we got to look into that. That was another one of the German Holocausts that took place, a 30-year war. But anyway, which is horrible, you know. But anyway, if you look at this, Rome is a place of debauchery, it's complete war, no peace, craziness, crazy hunger for power. And, you know, we've seen these so-called popes and we've seen these Caesars. And, man, you know, they're claiming their God. All kinds of crazy, crazy things, worshiping all kinds of gods. And it's true, red is the primary color of the nation. So make of it what you will. I can't say whether that's true or not because it's just, I don't know. But it doesn't speak of the, unless it's just a wicked generation or whatever it is, it doesn't speak of Anglo-Saxondom in this, in, you know, like it just doesn't seem the same as the Anglo-Saxon kings. And it's odd to see the kind of debauchery that this, you know, this thing brought forth, the Pauline doctrine and all kinds of things that make you wonder. Like it was a hellhole from, you know, right from the beginning. It was established by a murder. Strange, isn't it? And so, you know, make of it what you will. I'm not saying that's, it's definitely the way it is. But there's a lot of things we don't know about history and a lot of things that have been covered up about history. And I always wondered why these statues, they always had all this really curly, curly hair. It's not that white people don't have curly hair. There's some people that have curly hair. But you know what I'm talking about. So, the rape and suicide of Lucretia led to the abolition of the monarchy. The beginning of the 6th century was a new beginning for Rome, Roma. That was the time the people decided to get rid of the monarchy for good. Ticinius Superbus, Tarquin the Proud, quote-unquote, was the 7th and last king of Roma until the papal monarchy. Tarquinius had a son named Sextus who raped the virtuous wife of his friend named Collatinus. Her honor defiled by the brutal rape, Lucretia committed suicide by stabbing herself in the heart. So Tarquinius Superbus was king from 567 to 497. Oh, no, that's his birth. Okay, he reigned from 535 to 509, but his lifespan was 567 to 497. You know, that's another thing is these kings don't reign for very long. I mean, you know, some of them die at age 29. I mean, it's wild stuff. If you just read what maybe I'll take the time to read it to you because it is astonishing, but not. I don't know if we'll make it today. Anyway. Lucius Junius Brutus was a nephew of King Tarquinius. Brutus means dull or slow-witted, quote-unquote, in Latin. Brutus was by no means slow-witted. He loathed his uncle's tyrannical reign, but kept his confidences to himself. The rape of Lucretia, which means light, by the way, by Sextus Tarquinius and her subsequent suicide was a milestone in the history of Roma. Lucius Junius Brutus, an ancestor of Caesar's assassin Brutus, was fired with indignation by the rape and suicide of Lucretia. Right then and there he vowed that Tarquinius would be the last king of Roma. The normally placid and mild Brutus was changed into a new man by the rape and suicide of Lucretia. Her father and mother, or her dad and mother, were overwhelmed with grief while they stood by weeping helplessly. Brutus drew the bloody knife from Lucretia's body and, holding it before him, cried, "By this girl's blood, none more chase till a tyrant wronged her, and by the gods," he said, "I swear that with fire and sword and whatever else I can lend strength to my arm, I will pursue Lucius Tarquinius, another light Tarquinius, right? Lucius, the proud, his wicked wife and all his children, and never again will I let them or any other man be king in Rome. Livy, The Early History of Rome, page 102. Brutus kept his word and led a coup d'etat against Tarquinius Superbus. The king, who was conducting a war against Ardea, see, he's the king's at war. I mean, you know, it's always, like I said, it's just insane, is really what it is. He was conducting a war against Ardea, hastened back to Rome on hearing the news of the coup, but found the gates barred against him. Meanwhile, the leaders of the revolt went to Ardea and won over the army, which expelled the king's sons. Brutus and Tarquinius Collatinus became the first consuls, and Brutus made the people swear never again to tolerate a king and to punish with death anyone who tried to restore the monarchy. Cornell, The Beginnings of Rome, page 215. That historic coup d'etat and the abolition of the monarchy was a new beginning for Roma. Even the fasti or calendar began from that date. The Greek twins Castor and Pollux were adopted to give the proper pedigree to Republican Roma. It appears that Republican Romans were ashamed of their seven kings and wanted a proper pedigree for their founding of the city. To accomplish that, they looked to the east and the rising power of Greece. After his exile, Tarquinius, fought desperately to regain his throne. Now, that's a misprint. It has to be, because his name ain't Tarquinius, it's Tarquinius, yeah, that's what I thought. So it's a misprint. After his exile, Tarquinius fought desperately to regain his throne. The Battle of Lake Regillus was a decisive encounter between the monarchists and republicans. According to tradition, Castor and Pollux fought on the side of the republicans. You see, doesn't that sound like America? In reality, you know that much of America is designed after Rome, right? In other words, Capitoline Hill is Capitol Hill in America. And there's many other things. In reality, the appearance of the Greek twins just meant that the newborn republic was repudiating its past links with the Roman monarchy. The Romans also began to adopt the Greek style of fighting and Greek armor. Virgil is traditionally ranked as one of Rome's greatest poets. His Aeneid has been considered the national epic of ancient Rome from the time of its composition to the present day. Modeled after Homer's Iliad and Odyssey, and the Aeneid, it says the Aeneid follows the Trojan refugee Aeneas as he struggles to fulfill his destiny and arrive on the shores of Italy. In Roman mythology, the founding act of Rome. Queen Cleopatra had twins with her lover Marcus Antonius. Queen Cleopatra, the last pharaoh of Egypt, was living proof of how disastrous female rulership can be. The femme fatale and Jezebel on steroids, that's what it says, was totally controlled by that old serpent, the devil, and Satan, Revelation 12:9. She seduced two of the most powerful men in the world at that time and killed her own brother and sister. She was known as the poisoner, quote unquote. Yeah, I'm pausing there for... She was known as the poisoner, and during her reign, she perfected the deadly art of poisoning. Caesar's hero was Alexander the Great. Right before his assassination, he was mobilizing his legions to invade Persia and then India. With his battle-hardened troops and unlimited Egyptian gold, he would have succeeded. Nothing has changed since that time. The West still wants to conquer the East. In 46 BC, Queen Cleopatra, Isis, quote-unquote, and her son, Caesarian Little Caesar, quote-unquote, entered Republican Roma in regal style. She was determined to marry Julius Caesar and restore the Roman monarchy, no matter what the cost. Her arsenal included limitless amount of Egyptian gold to bribe the senators, and her pharmacopoeia included deadly poisons for the patriotic senators who could not be bought. You see what I mean? It has this Jewish air about it. Listen to this statement again. Her arsenal of limitless amounts of Egyptian gold to bribe the senators, sounds like the Jews, right? And her pharmacopoeia included deadly poisons for the patriotic senators who could not be bought. Sound familiar? Unfortunately for Cleopatra, there were patriotic senators who loved their republic and couldn't be bought. Well, we don't have that in America, do we? Seriously, we don't. They've all been bought. I don't think there's any, not even one of them I could think of. So I guess, at least in Rome, they had some patriotic senators who loved their republic and couldn't be bought, but we don't have that here. Urged on by Cleopatra, Caesar grasped the kingly crown and was assassinated on the Ides of March, 44 BC. Now, you see Julius Caesar here, and interesting, he has straight-ish hair, but when you look at Marcus Antonius, who's also called Bacchus, he has this big, big, curly, curly, curly hair. He doesn't seem to have a hook nose. So, the feisty, resourceful queen was not deterred by that setback. She started an affair with Caesar's top general, Marcus Antonius. Antonius was already married to a woman named Fulvia, but she had a timely demise in 40 BC. Oh yeah, timely. After the assassination of Julius Caesar, Cleopatra began an affair with Marcus Antonius, the dead Caesar's top general. That affair led to the birth of twins, a boy named Alexander Helios and a girl named Cleopatra Selene. Cleopatra convinced Antonius that the twins were Isis and Osiris, the founders of the Pharaonic dynasty, reincarnated or back from Duat or Hades. Unbelievable. The twins Isis and Osiris were married to each other, so her twins also expected to carry on that diabolical tradition. Sounds familiar to you today with the Jews marrying each other and all the other beasts of the field marrying each other? The lovers later had a boy named Ptolemy Philadelphus. Cleopatra urged her lover to overthrow Caesar's legal heir, Octavian, who is another big-time curly-haired fellow. And together they planned on establishing an Egyptian dynasty that would rule the world from either Rome or Alexandria. Caesar left no will, as he expected Caesarion to succeed him as the ninth king of Roma. His wife Livia Drusilla quickly produced a will naming Caesar's grandnephew Octavius as his heir. As his heir. I'm looking at the picture of her, too. She's got extremely curly hair as well. Livia Drusilla, wife of Caesar, 63 BC to 14 AD. After the death of Caesar, his wife Livia quickly produced a will making Octavius the legal heir of Caesar. Octavius, or Octavian, was a mere 19-year-old with no military or political experience. At the behest of Cleopatra, Marcus Antonius tried to poison him, but he was divinely protected. Octavius became Caesar Augustus, and he was princeps when the Messiah was born in Bethlehem around 4 BC. This attempt by Marcus Antonius to poison Octavius failed, and he became the nemesis of Queen Cleopatra. At the Battle of Actium in 31 BC, see, there's always battles, there's always everything, there's no peace, it's always going. Does that sound like our world today too? There's no peace anymore. Anywhere the Jew is in control, like in Rome, obviously. See, the funny thing is the Jews had great sway with these Roman emperors, certain ones, as we have read, and with certain popes and so on and so forth. But they've always had synagogues in Rome. They've always had a presence there, just like they do here, just like they do everywhere. And, of course, they've got the dough. So, you know, how do you think Herod Agrippa became king of so-called Judea? Right? He's an Edomite. Well, they put him in charge over there because they thought he could control the Jews. Because the Jews are a pain in the, you know, to anywhere they are. And they were a thorn in Rome's side, too. But it is interesting, isn't it? You know, I've thought about this possibility that Rome could be Edom's extension. And it fits it in many ways, but it's something you could think about too. It's just really strange. So, let's continue here. Octavius did a great service for mankind by ending the corrupt, inbred Ptolemaic Egyptian dynasty. The Roman Senate named Octavius Augustus, and the month of August is named in his honor. The Augustan age with the Pax Romana was indeed the golden age of Roma. From that time onward, Romans associated female rulers, listen to this. Now, see, they at least had the brains to see this, right? But you see, today we're there's more female leaders than there are male leaders at this point, right? Listen to what the advice of Rome would even be about for this. From that time onward, Romans associated female rulers with corrupt monarchies. However, the world is still feeling the effects of Cleopatra's seduction of Caesar because we still use the corrupt Julian Egyptian calendar, with the year starting in the middle of winter. Now, of course, don't think I don't know that the men are all bought and sold now today. But we're talking about over time. You know, men are natural leaders. Women are not supposed to be leading anything but their children. And that's it. Don't be mad, ladies. The ship that brought St. Paul to Rome in chains was named after Castor and Pollux. Incredibly, the ship that brought St. Paul to Rome in chains was named after the twins Castor and Pollux. The charge against Paul was treason, preaching that Jesus, it says Joshua of Nazareth, but it's Jesus of Nazareth, was an earthly king. St. Paul was a Roman citizen by birth, it says, and every Roman citizen had the privilege of appealing to Caesar if he was unjustly condemned. St. Paul was unjustly condemned, and he did appeal to Caesar for justice, it says. Here is St. Luke's description of the final leg of St. Paul's journey to Rome as a captive. And after 3 months, we departed in a ship of Alexandria, which had wintered in the island, whose figurehead was the twin gods Castor and Pollux. That's from Acts 28:11. Immediately after his arrival in Rome, St. Paul began to prepare his defense. It's called the Epistle of Paul, the Apostle to the Romans. Here is what he taught concerning Christian relationship to the government. Let every soul be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from Elohim, and the authorities that exist are appointed by Elohim. Therefore, whoever resists the authority resists the ordinance of Elohim, and those who resist will bring judgment on themselves. For rulers are not a terror of good works to good works, but to evil. Really? Oh, really? Think about those words. Do you want to be unafraid of the authority? Do what is good, and you will have praise from the same. Romans 13:1-3. However, Jerome's Latin Vulgate version corrupted that verse also. Let every soul be subject to higher powers. Latin prostabilis subliminoribus. For there is no power but from God, and those that are ordained of God. Therefore, he that resisteth the power resisteth the ordinance of God, and they that resist purchase to themselves damnation. For princes are not a terror to the good work, but to evil. Wilt thou then not be afraid of the power? Do that which is good, and thou shalt have praise from the same. Yeah, well, I mean, basically, we're in an age today when if you try to do good to the kingdom, they become a terror to the good work. Yes, they do. And I mean all the nations. And I believe it's always been that way. I mean, as far as, especially in some place like Rome, right? I mean, if you've got an evil king, do you think the Father wants you to obey him? I don't know. That's a good question, isn't it? I don't think so. We're supposed to resist evil with wisdom, though. Anyhow, the English word prince, derived from the Latin princeps, now means a male ruler, monarch, or member of a monarch's family. The feminine equivalent is princess. St. Paul's Damascus Road experience is related in Acts chapter 9. Of course, 9, the devil's number. In that verse, Jerome said that Christ told St. Paul to testify before kings. And it says the Lord, I'm not going to read this part because I'm not interested in this Paul stuff. I really don't care. In 313 AD, Romulus was renamed St. Peter and Remus was renamed St. Paul. The city of Romulus and Remus became known as the city of St. Peter and St. Paul when Emperor Jesus Constantine fought his way into Rome in 313. I didn't know that was his name, Jesus Constantine. When the papacy was founded by Emperor Jesus Constantine, Romulus was renamed St. Peter and Remus was renamed St. Paul. After Jesus Constantine moved the capital to Constantinople, Roma was ruled from that city. With the throne of the Caesars vacant, the Bishop of Rome saw an opportunity to usurp the office of Pontifex Maximus. Now, what's interesting is, what are the Jews trying to tell us in their Star Trek series with the Romulans, you see? Don't they have pointed ears? I mean, isn't that interesting? And don't they talk? Didn't Spock say that, not that Spock, what is Spock? But he's a half-breed. I know that. He's a half-breed. And they talk about the Senate. You know, they had a Senate that his dad was a member of the Senate. Remember? Isn't it interesting? Romulus, the Romulans. You know what I mean? You know, to see what these people do, we could look into that and say, well, who are the Romulans in these particular series and see what it says about them. I'm sure you'd find that quite interesting. So you could do it yourself, or if I get to it, we'll be able to do it sometime. So, following the removal of the capital of the mighty Roman Empire to Constantinople, centuries of chaos ensued in Western Europe. During that time, the papacy gained more and more political power. Here again is the joining of church and state. And that's how it was under Herod's, you know, the Pharisees were both the political party and the religious party. The twin Benedict of Nursia is the founder of Western monasticism. Okay, that's a new word. He is also one of the six patron saints of Europe. The Christians in the Roman Empire loved their old Latin translation of the Holy Scriptures. That was the version of St. Patrick that St. Patrick brought to Hibernia. They rejected Jerome's corrupt Latin Vulgate version. And as a result, the Benedictines created three new languages, Italian, French, and Spanish. You cannot have celibate monks without an available supply of celibate nuns. So his twin sister, Scholastica, founded the female branch of Benedictine monasticism. Benedict's first monastery was the world-famous abbey at Monte Cassino. Amazingly, the Romance languages, Italian, French, and Spanish, were created by Benedictine monks. Another giant twin in the papal Roman pantheon was Catherine of Siena. Catherine of Siena had a twin sister named Giovanna, who died shortly after the birth of her twin. Along with Francis of Assisi, she is recognized as the patron saint of Italy. Her empty head, quote-unquote, is on display at the Basilica of San Domenico at Siena. After she died in Rome, the people of Siena wanted to have her body, knowing that they could not smuggle her whole body out of Rome. They decided to take only her head, which they placed in a bag. When they stopped by the Roman guards, they prayed to Saint Catherine to help them, confident that she would rather have her body, or at least part thereof, in Siena. When they opened the bag to show the guards, it appeared no longer that to hold her head, but to be full of rose petals. Once back in Siena, they reopened the bag and her head was visible once more. That was how the empty head, quote-unquote, of Catherine came to be on display in her hometown of Siena. Rome became a monarchy once again in 755 A.D., when the book of Revelation was written by the Apostle John, the Alpha and the Omega predicted that Roma would once again be ruled by a monarch. And here is the mind that has wisdom. This is from Revelation 17, 9 and 10. And here is the mind that has wisdom. The seven heads are the seven mountains on which the woman sits, and there are seven kings. Five have fallen, one is, and the other is not yet come. And when he comes, he must continue for a very short time. Here is a list of the seven kings who ruled Roma prior to the abolition of the monarchy in 509 BC. Romulus was the first. Numa Pompilius was the second. Third was Tullus Hostilius. Fourth was Ancus Marcius. Fifth was Lucius Tarquinius Priscus. Sixth was Servius Tullus. And seventh was Lucius Tarquinius Superbus. The millions of Christians in the Roman Empire could not possibly conceive of a return to the dark days of the seven kings. So listen, if you've wanted to know what SPQR means, it means Senatus Populus Quae Romanus Me, and it means the Senate and the People of Rome, SPQR, the Senate and the People of Rome. That was the signature of the Republic and was adopted when the Republic was born in 509 BC. Even the mighty Caesars did not give themselves flattering titles, but were simply called Princeps Civitatis, meaning first citizen. Many scoffers mock at the prophecy and believe that it could never refer to the Republic in Roma. Time proved them wrong, however, it says. Benedictine monks forging the missive from St. Peter up in heaven. And they got, kippahs on, right? It is beyond belief, but Roma became a monarchy once again in 755 with the infamous airmail letter from St. Peter to King Pepin of the Franks, commanding him to save Roma from the Lombards. At that time, SPQR was replaced with IHS, Isis, Horus, and Seb. And they try to say it's in his service, right? I don't know why it would be Seb, but I could see it being Set. But what about Osiris, Isis, Osiris, and Horus? I don't get the Isis, Horus, and Seb thing, but whatever.
History is supposed to move forward and not backward. Julius Caesar was assassinated for grasping a crown. Roma was monarch free for almost 1,000 years before the usurpation of the papal monarchy. The keys in the papal coat of arms represent Romulus and Remus, and not St. Peter and Paul. St. Cephas, or Peter, never set foot in Roma because he was wanted by Emperor Claudius for grave robbing. Really? The abomination of desolation is the papal monarchy ruling in Republican Roma. How could he be wanted? How could Peter be wanted for grave robbing? That's ridiculous. Yeah, it shows a picture of Pope Francis here, the clown, and he's got the triple crown on. He sits there and he looks like if he moves, the thing will fall off his head. So, until recently, the papal monarchy was hereditary. Popes were usually nephews of former popes. Nephew is a euphemism for son. So nephews of popes were not lying when they called their uncles holy fathers. Christ warned his followers to flee to the mountains when the abomination of desolation was set up. When ye therefore see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet, stand in the holy place. Whoso readeth, let him understand. Then let him be who them which be in Judea flee into the mountains. Matthew 24:15-16. The abomination of desolation is indeed the papal monarchy reigning in Republican Roma. Well, I'm not so sure about that. But he does claim he's God. There's no doubt about it. I don't know if that's the holy place, though. That's the only problem. Then the woman fled into the wilderness where she had a place prepared of Elohim that he should feed her there 1,260 days, Revelation 12:6. From that verse, it is plain that the papal monarchy should be gone with the wind after 1,260 years. If we add 755 to 1260, we can see that indeed the papal monarchy is living on borrowed time. Well, therefore, it hasn't come true. See, so it can't be the right thing. It's just that simple. When I told you about a book, it points out this book called The Roman Empire, The Empire of the Edomite. When I went to read this book, it was just so much technical Hebrew and all that stuff that it wouldn't have been anything to read to you because it was just too much going through it. Also, the guy doesn't know, He doesn't know who the real Israelites are and so on and so forth. So it's just, I just passed it by. So this is what it comes down to, ladies and gentlemen, is that history is possibly, you know, there's so many possibilities of what history really is and who the Romans really are and all these things. Imagine that if that is an extension of Edom. I don't know. I know that it doesn't seem that it's very Anglo-Saxon in the sense of, I mean, it's just like crazy war after war after war. I mean, there's just no peace. Anglo-Saxon people, we're a people of the Father. We love peace. Now, we have to do war. Sometimes we do war. But we generally like peace. We want peace. We don't want war. It's the Jew who always wants war. And it's the same today. The American people don't want anything to do with going over to Iraq or any of these places. We want nothing to do with it. We have no business over there. It's not our country. We have no right to reorganize the Middle East. And it's not the will of the American people, period. It's the Jews, man. It's the Edomite Jews who always promise peace, but there is no peace with these people. If the Roman Empire is an extension of Edom, you can certainly see that the fruits of the Roman Empire are the same as the fruits of the Jews. I mean, the hunger for power, poisoning people and killing people and just to get into the power. I mean, it's just, it's not natural. It's demonic. So I don't know what you think of that, but I told you we'd read this, and I think it was an educational read, a little bit of history. And you know that Octavian or Octavius is the one who was in charge of Rome when the Messiah was here. You know, I always give a good piece of advice at the end of the Rabbit Hole radio show, and that is, don't go down the wrong hole.
Just do the best you can. The flames will burn away the waste, all the lives that they told erased. A man without a face.